Okay, hey, this is Hank Alexander, and we are now streaming live on Ustream. Tonight, I've got once again with me, I've got Sean Donahue from the Revolution Recap. How you doing tonight, Sean?
Great, how are you, Hank?
Doing fantastic, thanks. Wish we were here under better circumstances, and we have a special guest with us tonight, Mr. Brian O'Connell, who has written for so many different things. I can't even remember how many he's written for. So, Brian, refresh my memory. It was Soccer New England. It was something else.
It was New England Soccer News,
Okay,
and
New England Soccer News.
for a while I had a blog called House of Soccer that I just has been dormant, unfortunately, but hopefully we'll get that refired up really soon.
Awesome, awesome. So, fellas, we're here tonight to mourn the passing of yet another Revolution season, where we've had so much promise just ripped from our. From our lives, with yet another—I mean, amazingly—another trip to the playoffs, and I think it was very shaky whether or not we were even going to get there when it came down to the wire. And Sean and I talked about it a while back, Brian, and everything just went the Rev's way to get us into the playoffs. And even that first performance in the playoffs, we did fairly well, to come back from a goal down, and then end up actually winning that game. And going into Chicago with the lead, and the game. Let's just go ahead and get beat up on the game from last week, where the Revs went to Chicago, tried to basically hold on for extra time, but it didn't really work out. Let's start with Sean. Sean, what were your thoughts of last week's game in Chicago?
Well, it didn't start out good, but I thought, of course, with Chicago getting the goal in the first half to, take the lead in that game and tie the series. But I thought the Revs started working better later in the match. Things were looking better. I thought when Mauricio Castro came on, I actually thought really a lot of the problems from Chicago were coming down that their right flank, the Revs' left flank. And I thought when Castro came on, that kind of slowed them down a bit. He was doing a great job holding possession and helping the Revs out. The Revs had some decent chances. Jankowskis had that header that went off the crossbar. I thought they were playing pretty well. When to me, I thought the refereeing was questionable. It seemed to me like calls for Chicago, were not calls for the Revs. There's been a lot of questionable refereeing this year. I think the Revs, in a lot of games, have been on the lucky side of it and have gotten some good calls. But I think it's fair to say in this game, the ref was doing them no favors. To me, it looked like every time the Revs would commit a foul, Alex Preuss, who was the referee of the year, but how much is that saying based on last year's referee being
No
suspended
kidding.
for all this season? But to me, every time the Revs committed a foul, it looked like Alex Preuss would be running over there, screaming at the Rev player, "Don't do this again," or pulling out the yellow card. Certainly in some cases it was deserved. Other occasions maybe you question a little bit, but I thought it was a matter of time before one of these Revs players would get got so frustrated with how the game was going, that someone was going to get a red card. We didn't see that, but we did see Castro and his reaction to that. Time when he was kind of shoved into the boards there, and get it kind of got his wrist basically slit on that board and had to get stitches and left the game. And then Wells Thompson had to come in. I thought that was really actually a turning point in the game too, because once Castro came out, Wells Thompson clearly not the same player as Castro,
Not at all.
and could not hold up the ball the way Castro was doing. Castro was doing a great job keeping possession. I was noticing there'd be three defenders on him. He'd still find a way to pass it to a Revs player and keep possession. I didn't see him lose the ball once. So I thought he was doing a great job when Wells Thompson came on. It just completely changed the game, and that's when I think Chicago kind of started to take over the game again. And to me, when that happened, it was just inevitable. When was Chicago's next goal going to be? At the same time, though, I thought Chicago's winning goal, there were a couple of fouls you could have called on that. About 30 seconds earlier, Charlie Joseph was up in the attacking third, or close to the attacking third. He gets tripped up by a guy that's a Chicago player that's on the ground. To me, that was a foul that didn't get called. And then, of course, Osei was shielding the ball. Questionable whether or not that was a foul, but if you call the foul earlier, it doesn't even matter. You can complain about that. At the same time, I don't think the Revs, at that point, we're going to win that game anyways.
Brian, I don't know about you, but I felt like that the first half hour or so, the Revs actually showed well. I mean, like Sean said, we saw that great header from Jankowskis, which, wow, that was fantastic. Where was that all season? You look at their first half hour of play up until that goal scored, and then it just seemed like, hey, ooh, hey, you know what? I don't know if they really, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I don't know if they just kind of, I don't really think they retreated into their shell, so to speak, but I really feel that all of a sudden that little switch went on in their head and said, wow, you know, we better not give up another goal or otherwise we're not going to win, you know?
Yeah.
And they kind of got a little tentative in their play. What do you think of that?
I think the word is definitely tentative. I mean, they brought in Cashman. I mean, Sean and I watched, saw the game, and we were watching it over at CBS scene. No plug right there, but but we were watching the game, and we both noticed how much of an influence, Castro had on the game. I mean, he if there was a player that was gonna snap the revs out of their, out of their, insecurities in the midfield, it was him. It was a guy that can hold the ball, and it was a guy that kind of can control the pace of the game. And he was honestly, I agree with Sean completely that he was a guy that could have, like, if he stays in the field, for the rest of the game, maybe we're talking about, a home game versus Real Salt Lake. But I mean, it's tough because, I think, the Fire kind of sees, they got that first goal from Thorington, and, they kind of, they had the momentum, and it was tough to kind of stop momentum when you're on the road, especially in front of, and especially at Toyota Park, where they just have a tremendous home field advantage, so it was going to take, like we said, like Jankowski, nailed the crossbar, and, who would have known, who would have known what had happened had he, had that been, six inches lower. So, we'll never know, but, I agree. The revs kind of did get tentative, and unfortunately, it's kind of been a trademark of like a lot of revs playoff games. Like when they go into the, when they find themselves down, they kind of, with the exception of 2 years ago where they came back to New England, down 0-2 after the first leg versus Chicago, they really get tentative, when they're either tied or they go down. So, I don't know, we'll never know what would have happened if Castro had stayed in the game and not gotten hurt. But, they had that late rush very, very late, last 2 or 3 minutes, and then going into extra time, they put together a few good chances. But, it's something I mentioned to Sean. Yeah, it was just a little too late. And, what are you going to do when, your strikers aren't scoring? I mean, it's just, if you don't have anybody up top that can just, put a little bit of fear into, the Chicago back line, you're not going to get very far in the playoffs. I mean, that's, just knowing that you're missing pieces, just you're kind of playing with one hand tied behind your back or one foot tied behind your back, if you want to make the soccer analogy. But, yeah, it was a tough game. I mean, they to get to see where how far they got with the players they had, I think was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and really, kind of a testament to Steve Nichol. I know my buddy over in Denmark who follows the Revs, from a more avid than a just your casual fan. He's a Leeds United supporter down to his every fiber in his being, but he also followed the Revs, and the bane of his existence is Steve Nichol, and I don't know why. I think it has something to do back in the day when he was when Steve was still playing for Liverpool, and my buddy was a Leeds fan, and there must have been something that Steve Nichol did or something to upset the Leeds supporters. But in the end run is every chance he gets, he is bashing on Steve Nichol and his management style. And there are times when I don't agree with what he does, and some of his substitutions I've found to be questionable, or lack of substitutions, I should say, as well. But to your point, how they got this far with the players that they have is insane. I mean, you look at they had very limited production from their strikers. Granted, I think Dubé had had a career year in terms of Dubé, Kelly Dubé. He had 8 goals, but and 3 of them came in one game, you'd like to see that a little bit more spread out over the course of the season. Give us a goal when we really need one, not when we're already 2-0, winning or something. Not that I'm complaining too much, man. I loved seeing the hat trick as much as the next guy, and it's fun. But, you look at other strikers out there that, had pretty good seasons too, and they were very streaky as well. You look at Robbie Finley and Connor Casey, who, despite scoring 16 goals, I think he scored 6 of them in 2 games. And so, you know, over the rest of the course of the season, he did, you know, did fairly well. Still, I look at the lack of the attacking presence, and really the only fear, to use your word, Brian, that the Revs seem to put in at the attacking presence is when Shalrie Joseph was playing up top. And you kind of wonder if maybe, you know, you change the lineup a little bit, pull Kelly Dubé, and maybe play a 4-5-1 or something like that with Jankauskas up top, and you know, you put Castro in the middle, or even you know, Shalrie in the middle of a five-man midfield, and add those extra players in the middle there, and then use the speed on the wings with Nyasi and Mansali. But you know, we'll never know. We'll never know. We'll see who comes back next year. I think you know, there's going to definitely be some changes there. There's a lot of people who are at the end of contract, or maybe their contracts won't be renewed. One interesting point, our favorite reserve all-star, Wells Thompson, he opened up a Twitter account, I guess, very recently, which has been hacked. And there's lots of spam coming through it. And, you know, hey, learn the secret to white teeth from the mom who invented the shortcut. And the other spam thing about, jobless mom makes $8,000 a month part-time from home.
So essentially it's a celebrity hank now, because I think, yeah. Britney Spears got her Twitter account hacked today too. So, I mean, you know, Britney Spears, Wells Thompson, you know.
Hey. Don't go spreading rumors about Britney. Exactly. But you never know what's going to happen there. It's but the thing is that he did say in his Twitter feed that he has packed up his truck and has gone back to North Carolina. And I'm not sure if this is just a temporary move, if he does this every year, but I believe, I'm not sure what his contract status is, but if I do my math correctly, if he was awarded a 3-year contract back in 2007 when he started, you know, you got 2007, 2008, 2009, he's done. And I don't remember ever hearing that he was extended or along those lines, but you know, the Revs, they're so tight-lipped about their roster moves. I don't know one way or the other, but I'm wondering if this is the end of Wells Thompson's career in New England.
You know, as interesting, it's certainly still speculation at this point because we don't know the extent of that, but I wouldn't be overly surprised. I don't think he, to be honest, I don't think he's shown huge signs of improvement since he's been here. I think this year is actually, if anything, been kind of a regression from what we've seen from the past. And not that he's ever been really a star, but I think he's, for the time he's been here, he should have become a more disciplined player by now, and I haven't seen that from him. We still see the stupid fouls, the stupid yellow cards, and giving possession away in bad areas, which he did against Chicago as well. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him go. But it's still a speculation at this point, certainly.
Yeah. Brian, yeah, the only
reason why I think he would stay is because Steve Nichol loves him. Like, there have been many times where, you know, I mean, I think Sean said it well that, you know, he almost regressed this year. I mean, we're talking about a guy, like, as a rookie who started in 07 MLS Cup. I mean, you know, over, right. I mean, on the right. And I mean, that's just, you know, that was the year that they shifted over, you know, Steve Ralston over to the middle, and, you know, kind of he took over Andy Dorman's spot. And then, you know, Wells Thompson kind of found a home on the right. And for a while, like, he was actually looking towards the end of the 07 season that he was looking like he was the solution over on the right. And, you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, to an extent, it looks like he has regressed a little bit. You know, I don't know what the situation is specifically. But, you know, it just, you know, I remember being absolutely wowed during training camp for what it's worth. I mean, you have training camp stars every year, but, you know, I remember the first time I saw him over at the practice facility over in Foxborough. And I was just, you know, he played on the left, he played on the right, and he did everything just so well. He was so fluid, and, you know, just, and then, you know, 07, he kind of developed into his own, and, you know, 08, you know, wasn't that great, but, you know, and then this year, I think Steve Nichol likes the fact that he still has, you know, for what it's worth, potential. you know, that he showed him something maybe last year or the year before. But, you know, I don't know with a guy like Wells Thompson, you know, unless there's like nobody in the draft this year, if they can't find any kind of replacements for some of these guys, I can't see him coming back unless, you know, Steve Nichol absolutely wants him there.
You know, and I got to agree with Brian on this too. I think certainly there's, you know, lots of reason to believe that Nichol does like this guy from what we've seen from him. Admittedly, this year I haven't been to as much practices and as I have in the past. However, you know, last year I went to a lot of practices, went to reserve games, which is about all their home reserve games, went to the Open Cup games. And, you know, here I was seeing Wells Thompson, Joe Germanese. And to me, I couldn't see what Wells Thompson had that Joe Germanese didn't. I thought Germanese, I mean, albeit, again, wasn't a star, but, you know, played smarter than Wells Thompson. I saw him score a great goal in the Open Cup. And to me, I thought this was a guy that probably deserved more playing time than Wells Thompson. But Wells Thompson kept getting the playing time. Now, albeit I don't see him play every time, every day. But, you know, to me, just that one player was showing more, you know, the times I saw him than Wells Thompson has. And I was surprised we didn't see him more. But I think that, again, would lead to the theory that Wells Thompson certainly is one of Nichol's favorite players for whatever reason.
Yep. You know, Sean, I think the reason why Joe Germanese didn't get as much playing time is because Joe Germanese went to the wrong college.
That might be it.
I think that's what it is.
where did he go again? I forget.
Duke. He went to Duke.
But yeah, Darius Barnes went to Duke.
Yeah. Sure. Well, you know, Steve Nichol lights those guys from Wake. You know, it's the wrong college. Right. If he went to Wake, he'd still be on the team.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, Andy Dorman as well, who tried to fill that role, and Wells. I mean, Andy struggled in that role as well. I mean, you're basically looking at the vacancy left by Clint Dempsey, right? And who's going to be that dynamic midfielder that could play up the right a little bit and really attack the goal? But what we've seen, you know, and Wells was guilty of doing this too, is just these guys just go to the wings. Fire the ball in the middle. Go to the wings. Fire the ball in the middle. And the few times that they actually make the run inside, they actually both Nyasi and Wells Thompson look semi-dangerous. I mean, Wells Thompson had a beautiful goal. He was actually nominated for one of the goals of the year this season. It was, you know, his second goal in 3 years or whatever it's been. Definitely not enough for a starter in this league if you're going to be playing attacking midfield. And then Nyasi, you know, he makes that move in the middle every once in a while. He actually does look very, very dangerous, and he's gotten a couple of really great shots off, and, you know, a couple of them have gone in over the last couple of years, which is nice. But you don't really see that on a consistent basis, and I think that comes down to the way that this team is kind of been directed over the last, you know, especially when you have a striker like Taylor Twellman, who is, you know, not really a target player, but he's the kind of guy that can find that open space and make space for himself, as we saw a couple years ago against the Chicago Fire when he put in that beautiful bicycle kick. You know, he had two defenders on him, and somehow he managed to get a foot on that and knock it behind him. And I think when it all comes down to it, there's really, I think, two positions that need to be filled. One is we're going to need that dynamic midfielder again. We're going to need somebody to fill the gap left by Clint Dempsey. We haven't had it for 3 years. And Steve Ralston is great in the middle. He's a fantastic distributor of the ball. And, you know, we love him on set pieces as well. And he's a true leader on the field, and you got to keep him on the roster if he's healthy. But we need to develop somebody seriously as a backup for Steve Ralston as well as for Taylor Twellman. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the Revs do this offseason. Heaven help us if they, you know, waste another draft. I mean, this last season, we shored up our defense, which we needed to do. Darius Barnes was a third round pick, and he's, you know, here he was almost the rookie of the year. You know, Kevin Alston, you know, first round pick, generation Adidas player, again was in contention there. And there's some talk that actually they split the vote between the two of them, which is why neither of them were a finalist. And I don't know if that's what kind of weight that actually has, or if that's a, you know, even a true statement. But in the end, is you know, the one thing that I really wanted them to address last season, which they didn't, is striker and midfielder. And you know, now we're in a position where we're short on those two things again. And you know, it's almost a carbon copy this season of last season. You think about it, you know, because we went in, we limped into the playoffs, and we got shut down by the Chicago Fire. And here we are this year. We kind of, you know, we showed a little bit better in the first game, but, you know, didn't have the wheels to go the full distance. I don't know. I'm hopeful that there will be some significant changes made in the roster. Let's just
I think we all are. But like you said, going into this last offseason, you know, it still was the same situation. They needed another forward. I don't think – I mean, going into the season, you can argue that, you know, they wouldn't have predicted that Twellman was going to be out the entire year, certainly. But, you know, even so, did you want Twellman and Dubé to really be your only, you know, forwards with any really real experience? I mean, you had Mansali too, but I think it was pretty clear that a forward wasn't his best position. So you were going into the season really with those two guys, having traded away Adam Crisman, being your two guys with experience. You know, I don't think Dubé – I mean, Dubé's a good guy to have on the roster. I think he's – you know, not a bad option, you know, off the bench, but I don't think you want him to be your starting forward over the entire season. So even if you're expecting Twellman to be healthy the entire season, which would seem to be, you know, quite the risk going into the year, I still think you'd want another forward to partner with Twellman. So I think going into this offseason, you can't expect Twellman, you know, to be healthy for 30 games, you know, if at all. I mean, you hope he is. You can't expect that. I think they really need to get two new forwards going into this year, unless somehow you think Jankauskas is going to be back, and that he's going to return to, you know, better form, because he's been really inconsistent all year. We've seen some flashes from him, but overall he's been invisible in a lot of games. And I certainly don't think, you know, even if he does, with a preseason under his belt, return to better form, I don't think he's going to be capable of going, you know, through every game of a 30-game season either.
Right. Yeah. Because age here becomes a factor for Jankauskas. But you know, you look at his play over the last, you know, couple of games or whatever. Actually, over the course of the time he's been here, you know, for a guy that claims to be really good with his head and, you know, likes to play the ball in the air, he's getting manhandled by the defense in MLS. And you wonder if maybe he's just wasn't ready for the physicality of MLS. And, you know, we're a very physical league. Anybody will tell you that. You know, and this guy has been, did he come straight from Porto? No, I think he came from someplace in Russia. I'm not sure though. I don't remember. But the point is that he obviously was less than, in my opinion, less than productive, at least to the level that we wanted or needed him to be.
Yeah, Hank. I mean, I would almost venture to say that he was a stopgap. Almost, I mean, at least in my opinion, he was a guy that really, you know, he was, you know, they realized that they probably weren't getting Taylor back, and they said, how do we fix this to where we can kind of cut our losses for the rest of the year? And I think he's one of those guys. I don't think he's a long term solution. I think he's a guy who served out, you know, the rest of his prorated contract. And in all honesty, I don't think he'll be back next year. I think he's a guy that the Rev said, you know what, we need to get a guy who, you know, maybe a guy who can, who, you know, a tall guy like Jankauskas, and a guy who's good in the air. Unfortunately, he wasn't that great in the air this year, you know. But I honestly view him more as a stopgap in between, you know, getting the Revs through the rest of the season and then, you know, saying, okay, where do we start it? I mean, where do we go again with, you know, evaluating Taylor's health? Who can we get in the draft? Who can we sign in the offseason? I honestly don't see Jankauskas as a guy that the Revs have plans for next year.
And to me too, from Jankauskas, seeing him out on the field and seeing him, you know, putting up with all this physicality and not getting calls from the refs, he seems like a guy that's pretty frustrated, you know, in his time here. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, it's speculation, but it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him not want to come back here anyways. I mean, he was in semi-retirement, and I don't know if he's enjoying himself here, so I don't know what his – I wouldn't be surprised at all if he himself didn't want to come back.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, you know, you look at he is still one of the top 10 finalists for MLS Goal of the Year. And it was a beautiful, beautiful goal against Kansas City, which ended up being a 4-2 loss for the Revolution. You know, we just need more of that from somebody. And
absolutely.
I don't know if they can make a trade or whatever we've got in terms of allocation money or what our spot is on the allocation table. That I might have to do some serious research on that to see where we stand. I remember just thinking last year that, you know, we had all these picks and I thought we could maybe package some of them up and maybe move up in the draft. But that just doesn't happen in MLS like it does in the NFL. Where you know, you see people saying, oh, I'll trade you 2 second rounders for this, whatever, and the other thing. No, you know, Revolution trade for draft picks and for allocation money and then, or allocation table. And then they end up, you know, using the draft picks on players that they know will never see the field.
Well, they did move it to draft up Wells Thompson, Hank. I gotta point that out. Oh, you know? Come on.
Oh, yes. And look how well that worked out for
exactly.
them. Exactly. So, I mean, maybe that's the reason why they don't do it anymore. But anyway, we've got the rest of, 2009 and part of 2010 to think about where the Revs are going to go. Let's think about real fast. Let's talk about the future of Matt Rhys, and just because I feel that really over the last month or so since he, you know, had that injury and I played through that injury, and I was reading today that, you know, he had a career year. He had his first year that he ever had a goals against average, which was down underneath one, or a save percentage that was, and a save percentage that was outstanding. And just the last month of play from him, I just felt that he was, something was off, and you know that he, you know, maybe it was he was nervous with the communication factor. You know, obviously there was some breakdown of communication, specifically with Emmanuel Osse, as we saw in that game against Columbus about a month ago or so. And then, you know, you look at the breakdowns over the last couple of weeks where, you know, go back to the Seattle game where Freddie Montero chips that ball in. You know, I think, you know, a year ago even, 2 years ago even, Matt Rhys stops that ball. You know, I think maybe he's starting to slow up a little bit, and it pains me to say this because he's one of my favorite players, and I'm just wondering if, you know, maybe it's time to, you know, either bring in Brad Knighton or, you know, maybe make a change in that position for somebody else.
Well, you know, I agree with what you're saying as far as Rhys's drop in performance over the last month or so of the season. Certainly undeniable. To me, though, the mistakes look more like mental mistakes, which is, you know, surprising for a guy getting up in age. I think he's still, you know, in shape to do everything that he needs to do. You know, maybe that injury took a little bit of a toll on him, but even after that, he was still playing well. Just towards the end of the season, you know, and again, speculation, but when he had you know, another kid towards the end of the season, you know, maybe that was keeping him up at night. Maybe that was affecting him. You never know. But I think he's still, you know, got the reflexes and everything, and it's just some mental mistakes, which are really uncharacteristic of him and surprising to see towards the end of the season.
It's funny that you mentioned those mental mistakes, because you look back at the game, last week's game against Chicago, where Blanco scored that goal, and you know he had come out early to challenge Nyarko, and which was good, and you know he forced Nyarko back, and then you know Blanco's got the ball, and you know there are defenders everywhere, but you know Rhys, rather than, you know, taking a stand in front of Blanco, he actually, you know, kind of jumped out at Blanco a little bit, and Blanco was just waiting for him to move, just sitting there waiting for him to make his move so he knew where to hit it. And as soon as Matt Rhys made that move towards Blanco, that's when they scored.
Yeah, Yeah, Hank, and I gotta agree with you. I mean, I think that was kind of a, I won't call it a defining moment, but I think that was kind of, you know, one of those moments where, you know, you look at Reese and it just looks like, you know, at least during the series, you know, and down the stretch, they just didn't seem to trust his defenders as much as he had in the past. I mean, you know, you hinted at the you know, communication issues he had with Osei, but, you know, I think as a whole, I think it got down to the point where it was, you know, it was him on an island and just saying, you know, I got to do all this myself. So, you know, and I think that the Blanco goal was a perfect example of just, you know, him trying to do too much.
Right.
Like Brian was saying too, with the communication, I mean, we talk about the changes between this year and last year. I mean, the one major loss was Michael Parkhurst. And I think,
oh, yeah,
you know, as good as Darius Barnes has been, you know, as good at times as Emmanuel Osei has been, I don't think either of them is the same guy as Michael Parkhurst. I don't think either of them can organize the defense the way Parkhurst did. You know, as a smarter player as Parkhurst, being in those right positions. I mean, we talk about Barnes replacing Parkhurst. I don't think anyone, you know, from a draft or in a rookie year is going to have the impact that Parkhurst had his year. I really don't think he's a player that you can really replace in MLS. You know, he brought something to the table that these guys don't. And also with that three-man back line, I think you had a difference as well. You had Heaps in there, again, a veteran presence, and these guys are all going to be staying back. Where now you have Alston that, you know, sometimes is going to go forward, he's not going to get back, people have to move and cover for him. Heaps at times, that was the case too, less so on the end of the year. And I think it was really a different dynamic between the defense this year. You know, as good as they were, not along that many goals, and, you know, as you mentioned, Reese's goals against average is the best. However, he still had to make the most saves. He still faced the most shots of any keeper in the league. So I think it was just a different dynamic. We saw it more towards the end of the year than the beginning of the year, which is surprising, these mistakes. But certainly the defense is different this year than it was last year without Parkhurst and with a rookie there, you know, really with three new guys that it's their first year with the team. And certainly we saw the communication problems with Osei. And, you know, he's really one of the veteran guys out there, one of the guys that actually has pro experience. And if he's having trouble communicating with Reese and with the rest of the back line, you know, it's not a good situation.
No, not at all. And so you got to wonder what's going to well, what do you think? Do you think Osei is here next season?
I've heard, I don't remember where I read this now, that there's an option to keep him next season, because I mean, we heard that he's on loan. We haven't, you know, I can't confirm that, but that's what I have heard, that he's on loan. But at the same time, it sounds like they have an option for him for next year, so I don't know how that works out. I think he's, as I mentioned before, I think he's a great one-on-one defender. I think he has trouble communicating with the rest of his back line. He makes those mistakes, like we said, you know, passing the ball across the, you know, the goal box is not a good idea. even what we saw in this game, trying to shield the ball over the end line, he gets easily pushed off the ball. You know, you can't do that. You got to be stronger in that situation. I don't know who they bring in another rookie to replace him. Is that the answer? You know, Badia, you know, people thought he was going to be starting this year. He's been out injured. I think he's gone, so I don't think we're going to be looking at him as the answer. Certainly, I'd be shocked if he came back, especially at the salary that he's making. So I think unless you have a better option, you keep Osei, because Osei has shown really well in some of these games, and I think he's done a good job and, you know, prevented some goals in like really dangerous one-on-one situations. Maybe with another preseason under his belt there. I don't even remember when he joined the Reds. I think it might have been later in the preseason, but maybe with the full preseason.
He came in actually, he was late joining the team. He came in at second or third game.
Yeah, I feel like if
the season.
I feel like certainly a preseason. This was what we talked about with Badia last year too. Is, you know, if you get a preseason under his belt, help him out. And then of course he was injured, so he couldn't. But I think with Osei that could certainly help. And I would like to see him here next year. You know, at least as, you know, depth in the back line.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's your fifth guy if you do find someone to replace him.
Right, right. And I think, you know, you brought up an interesting point with because you look at Barnes and some of the success that, you know, Barnes and Alston have had this season in terms of, you know, being rookies, making it to the playoffs, and Barnes obviously with his notoriety primarily being for the only player that played every minute of every game this season, and you know, Alston with his speed down the flank, both had outstanding rookie years for various reasons. The upshot is are they ready to play in a three-man back line? I don't think so. I think because the thing you said, Rainley, is that Alston will take off down the wing, and then you've got two guys back. So I think, we've got to have the fourth defender there. And if it's not going to be Bedia, and, there's nothing out there that tells me that Bedia is going to be the guy, based on the fact that, he played 90 minutes in an Open Cup match, and, theoretically was available for the rest of the season and never saw the bench. And you get look at that and you say, okay, so there's obviously something there. Nickel doesn't like him, doesn't like the way he works, or doesn't like his work ethic or whatever. And so Bedia is out. I think you have to say that. Who else do you have that can play center back? Jay Heaps has done it serviceably. You can move Amechi Igwe to left back. Or Chris Tierney to left back. I don't think that's your solution. You look at, well, I think Igwe is at the end of his contract as well.
Yeah,
I'm not
I think
sure.
Igwe, along with Bedia, are pretty safe bets to be gone. I mean, I saw potential in Igwe. In the games that he played at left back, I thought he did a good job. I thought his speed was certainly an asset there, which is
Yes.
another thing I want to bring up, too, is Jay Heaps. He had a solid season. He played well at the beginning, but I think he was getting exposed towards the end of the year, especially in the Chicago series. In the first game, I know we were talking about it. Heaps was getting beat for speed on the right side. He was making some committing and getting beat, and we certainly saw it again in the second leg. With Heaps on the left side, he doesn't have the speed to keep up with these fastest wingers anymore, and he is getting beat sometimes. I hate to say it, but you almost want a guy with Igwe's speed back there to be defending these guys. You have Alston on the right, and he was doing a great job. Whenever Blanco went over there, he was doing a good job shutting him down, but Blanco was having an easier time against Heaps than the rest of, I think, Chicago's attackers were too. And I think that's why they were focusing their attack on that right flank or down the Revs' left flank. And in addition to Mansali being there, they were having a lot more luck against Jay Heaps as far as beating a man, one-on-one than they were against Kevin Alston. So I think that's another spot you have to look at as well. And I think Igwe showed a lot of potential for the Revs. I think when he played center back, he played awful, and I think that tainted a lot of people's views of him. But when we've seen him at left back, being in the Open Cup, being in the end of the season when they've needed him, I think he's shown well. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, as far as we're aware, his contract is up. He's a generation Adidas player. He's making a significant amount of money, but it's not counting against the salary cap. When that contract's up, it's hard to see, him staying with the Revs,
Or
unless he's going to
anywhere in
accept,
MLS.
unless he's going to accept, a highly reduced salary, which is, again, is hard to see. But I do think he's got a lot of potential. I think he could have helped this team.
Yep. I'm not sure what his status is as far. I know he's American, but I think he may even have dual citizenship, because I believe his father had dual citizenship. But I'm not sure. Anyway, my point being is that he may be able to go overseas and play. I think there'll be a couple of teams over in, maybe Norway, Sweden, or whatever. We'll pick him up, and maybe he can play in Belgium or France, where they, who knows? Who knows? Who knows? I don't see him fitting in the EPL, just because he just doesn't have that much experience yet. Maybe a lower league. In England, if you can get the work permit. But I don't think sticking around. You mentioned his performance at center back might have tainted some people's views of him. Well, it definitely tainted one person's view, and that person was Steve Nichol. And he definitely made a mental note in his mind that. This is not a guy that he can rely on in a clutch situation, which is unfortunate because, I've said it before. He performed better at left back than Chris Tierney did, in my opinion. And
no question, I think.
Chris is a another guy you kind of have to wonder about. Does he have a real future with his team? He's been a kind of a spot fill-in player, not your first choice off the bench. He's had a couple of starts here and there when they've been really strapped, and he's done all right. He definitely is not the fastest person in MLS. I mean, and I really hope he you know he can find a spot somewhere. I don't know if it's going to be with the Revolution. I just you know you look at you know if Castro comes back and he's healthy and can get a full season on under him, you know, in this league. You know, we think that you know he and Mansalli will handle the left-hand side. At least that's what I think. You know, and so what do you do with a you know a young, unexperienced or inexperienced, I should say, you know, kind of a left-footed set kicks free kick specialist. You know, do you keep a spot on your bench? I mean, he's not David Beckham. You don't keep a you keep a spot open on your roster for a guy like David Beckham. You know, Chris Tierney, as much, you know, he's a wealthy boy. He lives down the road. You know, I don't want him to that I think bad of you. I don't, Chris. I think you're an excellent soccer player. You're far better soccer player than a lot of other people out there. But you know, I just wonder if you've got a spot on the Revs. And you know, I'd love to see you get more playing time somewhere else. If it worked out that way, I'd love to see you get more playing time in the Revolution. I just don't think it's going to happen. But you look at the other options that they had at the defense. Like we said, we had you know, Jay Heaps could maybe play center back. I don't think he was great at center back. I thought he was serviceable there. There were a couple of plays there where, you know, he kind of was left flat-footed, so to speak. And then there's the other options they have at defense. Chris Albright, who I don't think is coming back either, considering the play of Kevin Alston. And if you have a guy like Alston, and you know if Alston gets injured or whatever, you can always put somebody like Steve Ralston in at right back. You know, it's a veteran. Smart veteran who can, you know, fill that role for a short period of time. And, you know, then you've got other people that can move up into the midfield, assuming that the Revolution go pick up those people in the off season. So, I mean, you look at the core group here at on their roster. You're going to keep Shaury Joseph. You're going to keep Taylor Twellman. You're going to keep Steve Ralston. You're going to keep Jay Heaps. There's one more.
No, Jeff Leronowitz is the key
yeah,
here
we
because
don't
his
know.
Contract is up. And to me, I'd be surprised if he's back because there. I know I've mentioned this before, but there's no conceivable way in my mind that the Revs have not offered him. You know, he's been starting for 3 or 4 years now. There's no.
At minimum salary.
I can't imagine that the Revs have not offered him a, you know, a raise. Along with the contract extension, and obviously, if they have, he hasn't accepted it. So, to me, I think that I mean, and if they haven't, you know, shame on them for that because that would be insane. But I would think if that at some point he's holding out and trying to make more money, either going over to Europe to test those waters. You know, maybe he doesn't, and maybe he's using that as like a bargaining chip here and wants to make more money. But you know, we don't know. But to me, I don't think he's gonna be back next year. I think I know Twellman. Taylor Twellman at the end of one of the last home games and said, "We really need to make sure that Steve Ralston and Jeff Leronowitz are back next year." So they want him. I know the players want him back, and certainly the team really could use him. But I would be a little bit surprised, to be honest, if he is back next year based on you know what we know.
Right, and I agree with you 100%. I think that you know if I was Jeff and I've been making a name for myself as one of the harder working, you know, defensive midfielders in this league. And, you know, in a country that is just so deep at you know, midfield, you know, you look at all the people that have played for midfield for the United States men's national team. Jeff Lorenowitz's name never comes up just because there's so much depth there. There's so much depth there. And, we've got he's got an opportunity now where he can probably go play overseas, start making a name for himself over there, play with some maybe a higher level of you know player around him maybe. Who knows? Depends on what league he ends up going to. But he can definitely make more money no matter where he goes. And that's got to be a factor for him. He's been living on, you know, peanuts. Literally, I mean, shells, peanut shells, not even the whole peanut. They've just been, you know, rock bottom salary for the last 3 years. And that's just not right. I mean, even before, he was a developmental player, so he was making even less. He wasn't even a senior roster guy. He was a developmental guy, and I think he was making $17,000 a year 2 years ago.
It's kind of the MO. I mean, Hank, it's kind of the MO of like the Revs. I mean, they milk these guys for, you know, for as little as possible, you know, getting the maximum reward, minimum investment. And, you know, as soon as the contract's over, it's like, you know, thanks for playing with us. You know, go get your money somewhere else. I mean,
right.
You know, they did it with Andy Dorman, you know, to an extent. I mean, not so much to an extent with Clint Dempsey, because we all know that he was going elsewhere. But, you know, they seem to get these guys. They bring them up. You know, they say, you know, here's your 3 years. We're going to pay you, you know, $12,000, you know, $17,000, $30,000. And you know, if you shine, great, go get your money elsewhere. We're not going to give it to you. And I think that's kind of always been the nickel approach, is that you draft like that, you get 3 years out of guy, and then after those 3 years are over, and you know, if they service you well, great. You know you got yourself a bargain. But if they don't, you cut ties, like a guy like Willie Sims, like a guy that, you know, I mean, granted, he was a generation Adidas player, but you know, he's kind of the opposite of a Jeff Laurano. It's a guy that, you know, came in with a little bit more fanfare than Jeff. And you know, he's, you know, you get guys like Jeff, and you know, they just, you know, they give him the 3 years, they give him the minimum salary, and then when it's come time to pay them, they say, we don't have a check for you. So, and then,
I mean,
they'll just, yeah.
And there are the notable exceptions, guys like Twaman, who became the face of the franchise, and Shari Joseph.
Yeah.
But I do want to say, I feel like it can't be Nickel who's making this decision. I mean, I think his hands must be tied. If that's the case, because I'm sure he wouldn't want to see these guys go, and he would be certainly thinks they deserve the money. I would believe, you know, it's got to be somebody else in the organization, or you know, Kraft himself, that, you know, just doesn't want to put that much investment in a team that's really not making that much money. Or, you know, we don't really know what the situation is, but you know, we can assume based on attendance, based on what we're seeing, that, you know, they're certainly not a highly profitable team. And I think, you know, we heard a few years ago that, you know, Los Angeles became the first team, you know, or one of the first teams to go in the black. And still the rest of the league still wasn't. So, you know, it's a tough situation. But you have to believe that it's not Nickel, you know, that's making that decision, certainly.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Sean. I think that it's definitely a bit higher up. And you look at, you hear the stories about when Joe Cummings was here, and Joe was the kind of the player personnel guy, technical director guy, and then Zenga came in to take over, and he said that Zenga made it absolutely clear that he was going to be the one picking the roster, not Joe Cummings, and Joe left. And you look at that, and then we went through the whole coaching carousel that we went through for a few years there before they finally, you know, settled on Steve Nickel. And Steve was basically the MLS, or I should say MLS, not the MLS, but MLS's kind of version of Bill Belichick. You know, you get it done with what you got, and, you know, he made it to, you know, he's made it to more playoffs than any other coach in MLS. You know, Bruce Arena included. And he's, you know, he has this kind of magic touch for getting him there. On a shoestring budget, you know, and so that's been working for the Revs to a degree. It's just not getting them over the hump. I mean, I think our best year was probably 2006 when, you know, our first matchup against the Houston Dynamo in the Cup Final, where, you know, went 118 minutes or whatever it was before anybody scored a goal, and then 70 seconds later. We're all tied up again, but the upshot being is that from that point on, just haven't really had the horses to get the Revs to the next level, because, you know, you lost Clint Dempsey, the Andy Dorman experiment didn't work, the Wells Thompson experiment hasn't worked. You've got an aging veteran captain in Steve Ralston, who still fills a very important role, better than a lot of other players ever will. But let's be honest. I mean, the guy's 35 years old.
Yeah, how many more seasons are you going to get out of him? I mean, that's really the question. A guy like him and Jay Heaps, I mean, how much longer can you ride these guys?
And that's kind of where I was going with the whole core of the team thing. I mean, with Taylor Twellman now, this year he'll be 30 years old. I mean, granted, he was born on leap year day, so he's really, seven and a half.
Yeah.
But he's going to be 30 this year. So the real core of this team, you've got five or six players, not including Jeff Lorenowitz. You got Heaps, you've got Twellman, you've got Ralston, and you've got Shalrie Joseph, all over 30 years old. And I think there's another guy there too. And if you keep Jankauskas, he's well over 30. But I wouldn't call him one of the core players either. Mm. And I really don't think Jeff Lorenowitz is coming back. So you basically have some huge, huge concerns now, where you've got some aging players, and nobody really is coming up behind them. And there's a limit. Obviously, there's a limitation to the league because there's the salary cap, and B, there's the reduced roster size. But the Revs are going to have to start making some changes somewhere in this roster to start really prepping down the road. Maybe Stefano Sengwe is the answer. Maybe this kid from Cameroon is the guy who's going to take the Revolution to the promised land in 3 years when Twellman finally decides to retire or something, or he's forced to retire due to injury. And that's the thing that really bugs me. And we've kind of been going on and on about this, is that the serious lack of depth at the striker position just is indicative of the lack of foresight that this team administration has, has shown. I mean, there's really been no planning for the future in terms of, goal production, who's going to be that scoring genius, who's going to be their go-to guy, who's even going to come off the bench. I mean, it's been, it was a failed experiment with Kenny Mancelli in a way, because they wanted him to be that third striker, that fourth striker off the bench. And it just didn't happen. It didn't happen. And I'm not sure what it is. I don't know enough about the Revolution's practice schedules or, their preseason games or whatever. I mean, back when Adam Crisman was with the team, he was lighting it up during the preseason, had a fantastic preseason, and then scored four goals his rookie year, which was good enough to get him mentioned in the rookie of the year candidate talks. And Mansali as well was doing all right. And there was kind of a showdown of who's going to be that third striker, and they ended up keeping both of them, and then last year got rid of Crisman. Mm. I look at that as a real significant mistake with this team. I'm not sure if it was because they would have needed to pay Crisman more money down the road, or if they knew that he was injured and was going to require surgery, or if Adam Crisman just wasn't happy here. I never heard that he wasn't happy here. I'm just wondering why he would trade him to Kansas City for draft picks.
I think that's a mistake as well. But even so, even if they had kept Adam Crisman, I really think they needed to go out, find another forward, because you're still going into the season with Taylor Twellman injured. As I said before, you hope he can play, but you don't know he can play. That's taking a risk. You want to go into the season even with Adam Crisman as Kelly Dubé, and Kelly Dubé as your starting forwards. It doesn't seem to be a combination that's going to strike a lot of fear into opposing defenses. They're serviceable players, they're good, MLS level players, but you think you can do a little bit better with this team. I mean, like you mentioned, 2006. If you look at the bench, the depth this team had in the bench. I mean, here they are, and they have, well, of course, Clint Dempsey was injured, so he didn't start. But, I mean, when you look at the reverse, you would have Andy Dormer available to come off the bench. That's the guy that could have changed the game. You had Jose Cancela that could come off the bench. There's another guy that can really change the game. Even Connell Smith even was a guy that was on the bench. You'd play him. Jose Manuel Abundis, he scored a couple goals for the Revs. Obviously, wasn't a huge success, but there's a guy with international experience in Mexico. These are a lot of guys, and Jeff Lorenowitz as well, because then you had Daniel Hernandez. I don't think certainly I don't think you can say Pat Finley is the equivalent to Daniel Hernandez. But, I mean, looking at that team, there was all these guys that could really come off the bench and be a game changer. And with these Revs, even when everyone's healthy, I don't think they really have that. But I do want to make one point there for frustrated Revolution fans about that 2006 appearance that they lost on penalty kicks. It was interesting to see Clint Dempsey step up and take a penalty kick in the Premier League last weekend when he wasn't able to in that cup final. And, of course, score in that pressure situation, but blame it on the injury. But I just wanted to bring up that point.
Yeah. I actually thank Clint very much for that penalty shot because he was the captain of my my EPL fantasy team last week. So, it worked out for me, but I wish it was only rewind to 2006. When it comes down to it, do the Revs have the horses on this roster right now to compete in 2010? I think the answer is no.
Absolutely not.
And if they make no moves, I would be surprised to see them make the playoffs. I mean, even if they manage to keep Jonathan Ronowitz, you can't rely on Steve Ralston, who's not going to come back till who knows when, maybe not even until halfway through the season. Who knows if and when Taylor will be ready. If they make no moves, unless they have a miracle, amazing draft and can come up with the next Parkhurst, Twellman, and Noonan all in one draft, I don't think they'll even make a playoffs next year.
No, if they go with the drafts they've had past years, which haven't been bad, but I mean they're not really finding any goal scorers. You need goal scorers, and I mean, I think Sean mentioned it earlier. You can't rely on Taylor Twellman to give you 30 games here, or even maybe 20. Who knows? And you need to find goal scorers. And if you don't find goal scorers in this draft, or if you don't find them, via international signings or wherever, this team will stay lethargic. It'll starve for goals, and you'll find Shalrie Joseph pushing up like he did this year, and which kind of leaves him really depleted in the midfield. And it's a situation where they play. They get hot for a little bit, they get cold for a little bit, and it's just there's no consistency. And I think you need for a team to make it to the playoffs, especially with two new expansion teams with an expansion team next year, and then two more on the horizon. You really, really need those playoff spots to become more of a premium. And you're not going to get into the playoffs, I think, 2 or 3 years from now. You're not going to get in the playoffs with the season that the Revs had this year.
Yeah,
and if you lose the Renowitz, there's one more weapon gone. There's a guy that. One of the few guys on this team that's a threat from distance, can draw guys out of the box, then the Revs become even more predictable.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to the wings. They're going to try to get the cross in. Because if he's gone, you don't really have to push out of the box because nobody's going to be scoring from outside of the box. I can't really think of another threat. I mean, Castro at times, who knows if he's going to be back too. I mean, I would certainly not be shocked to see him gone as much as I'd like to see him back. Really, I think that is, a huge loss in itself, just losing him, to make the offense even more stagnant.
Absolutely. And, he's been one of my favorite players since the day he started. And you look at what he's been able to do in such a short time. He's really, he owns that position. It is his. He earned it. And the fact that, he's more than likely going to leave and go someplace else, it's kind of discouraging. You really wish that, the league was a bit more mature, where they could make him a huge contract extension, but that's just not the case right now. And I think even with the big salary cap, if the salary cap goes through the roof and it doubles next year, then maybe Jeff gets a big extension and maybe he stays. But the way I hear it right now, the contract talks aren't going that great between the players' union and the owners of MLS. And there's even talk of a strike next year, which I think would really be crippling to the league, especially when you've got, these three new teams coming in the next 2 years, and a guy like Beckham over here who's done just him being here has added, put MLS on the map back on the map of the soccer world, so to speak. All right, so we've been going on for about an hour, pretty good. I'm thinking let's give it a prediction for the Revs. Well, we can't really do a prediction for the Revs this season. No, it's not going to work. I predict that the Revs will make the playoffs this season and lose to Chicago in a 3-2 aggregate. How's that work? We've got we've let's give our picks for the MLS Cup final. Who makes it in, and who meets in the final, and who wins? Go ahead, Brian.
Well, I'll tell you what I want to see, and I'll tell you what MLS wants to see. MLS wants to see Chicago and LA. They want to see two big markets. They want to see Cuauhtemoc Blanco versus David Beckham. What I would like to see is, honestly, I'll take half that equation. I'll take LA and I'll take Real Salt Lake. I think that would be a great matchup. I think you have a team that's as established as LA, and then you have a team that's like, you know, the up and comer, you know, with Real Salt Lake. And I think that would make for a great match. Both are very attack minded teams. And, you know, I think, you know, as far as a good soccer, I think that's what I'd want to see. So I'll call that prediction.
Yeah. I'd love to see Real Salt Lake make it. If Dynamo makes it, and Real Salt Lake make it, then it's gotta be the Dynamo. Cause I think, Dynamo has just got a better defense, I think, down the road. It's got a more veteran defense, and you look at the two rookies that are on LA. They've done all right. You know, got the rookie of the year on that team, and Omar Gonzalez. I think in the end, though, the veteran presence on the despite Jeff Cameron, who's native New Englander, we should not forget to mention Jeff Cameron on Houston Dynamo. I think that the Dynamo's defense is stronger in the end, and I think the Dynamo might actually hold off. If it's Dynamo versus Real, I pick Dynamo. I really think Real Salt Lake is gonna burn Chicago. I really do. I just have this feeling, I really want Chicago to lose. I don't know if it's just me hating on Chicago, but. I think that's going to be the final is Chicago. Real Salt Lake versus I really think it's going to be Dynamo, Houston and Real Salt Lake, and I think Dynamo wins. But if it's LA, I think Real Salt Lake has a chance. Sean, what do you think?
Well, I certainly agree with Brian that the marquee matchup for as far as the league is concerned would have to be LA and Chicago. Certainly with the star of David Beckham on Chicago, I think on LA and Blanco on Chicago, especially in Blanco's last year, that would be the huge matchup for the league. However, I agree with you. I think that LA has shown some weaknesses in this playoffs. I think Chivas exposed them a lot. I think they made some ridiculous mistakes in that first game, especially. And I think Houston got more experience. I mean, obviously LA's got Bruce Arena. You can't really find a more experienced coach than that. But I think we've still seen mistakes from LA. Like you said, Omar Gonzalez, rookie of the year on LA's back line, but he looks shaky in this postseason. I think we saw from Alston and Barnes, it's too late now to give him rookie of the year, but I think that they looked a lot more solid in the postseason, didn't look as shaky as Gonzalez has looked. Obviously, as they go further into the playoffs, he's got more experience, but I agree with you. I think Houston will come away with a win against LA, but I think that's going to be an incredible match tomorrow night between those two teams, because I think they're both capable of playing some great soccer. We know Houston's got an amazing defense. LA's attack this year has been outstanding, and their defense has been, more than solid too. Certainly, they've only allowed 31 goals, but with their very dynamic attack. But I do think that Houston will come away from that one. Chicago Salt Lake is a tough one to predict. Salt Lake, throughout the season, has put on some great results, played some fantastic soccer to watch. And we saw it against the Revs in their 6-1 victory over the Revolution, earlier in the season. I hate to remind people of that, but they have played some great soccer this season. They've
Did
played
we
some
even
bad
score
soccer
a
this
goal?
Season.
I think
you're right. I think about 6-0. Yeah, but I mean, they've played some great soccer. They've played some lousy games as well. You can't say for sure which team will show up, but if they come out against Chicago and play what they're capable of, I think it's going to win, because Chicago beat the Revs, but I'm still not that impressed with Chicago and how they performed at the end of the year. I think Blanco's slowed down a lot. I don't think he's the same player he used to be. I don't think you can rely on him to set up your attack. I think Brian McBride, towards the end of the year, has tailed off. I didn't think he looked too dangerous against the Revs, to the point where you hate to see him get injured, but I almost thought that Chicago was better off than the Arco on the field at that point. And I think he ended up being a key to the winning goal there. So I think that Salt Lake has the players capable of being in Chicago. Maybe they do. If they do end up going against Houston, I agree that they can't really beat Houston. However, we saw last year Salt Lake went on a run in the playoffs, but then lost to the Red Bulls at home. So maybe they've learned from that experience. Maybe they haven't. I'll go in and say Salt Lake wins, but I'm not too confident on that one. And certainly a Salt Lake Houston Cup final for me would be you know, very exciting one to watch. Two teams that play great soccer are capable of playing great soccer. But obviously, as I mentioned, the exact opposite is probably what would be draw more viewers to be what the league wants.
Yep.
Hey, guys! I actually got to bow out. I got work in the morning.
We have to wrap it up anyway. So thank you, Brian, and thank you, Sean. We're going to wrap it up right here. It's been great, and we should definitely do it again sometime. And you know, let's try and do something in the preseason when we finally figure out what's going on with the Revolution, and maybe we can give some predictions for the next season at that point. So
yeah, look forward to it.
All right, guys. Hey, thanks again, everyone, and. You know, we'll get this out on the podcast real soon. And if you missed the Ustream, it'll be out there. So, great. I'm going to hang up now, or at least stop recording. And we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks a lot for listening.
See you, Sean.
Thanks, Hank.
See you, Hank.
Yep. See you, guys. Bye.
See ya.